Hello and welcome to the Utah Puck Report. I'm your host, Jay Stevens. Gary cannot be here today because he's at hockey camp. And speaking of hockey camp, we've got a hockey camp guy, a hockey director. Our special guest today is Shannon Schmidt. Shannon, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Jay. It's an honor to be here.
I don't know why I emphasize your last name like that.
Yeah, it's
but
all right.
What did we say, 29? This is episode 29.
Right on.
You got to say that at the beginning of the podcast. It's in the unwritten rules. So Shannon is currently, you are the hockey director, and you're based out of Steiner.
Yeah, Salt Lake City Sports Complex. AKA.
Is that what it's really supposed to be called?
The official title is Salt Lake City Sports Complex.
Okay.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. Well, they all have real names, and every hockey player here knows we don't call any of them by their real names, because Murray is actually county.
County Ice Center. Acor goes by the actual name.
Is that what it's actually called?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not. Okay. Well, perfect. We got one right. Okay. So, Shannon, you're the hockey director. You are the program director for all the hockey that goes through Steiner. That's quite a bit because you have a double sheet.
Correct.
So you get all that stuff, and then you're also like this huge proponent. Like you're the guy behind the Lady Lightning. Is that right?
I have been, yes. That's been my my big torch for the last 7 or 8 years or so.
Have you kind of handed that torch off a little bit?
I completely handed it off.
Okay, so we'll get into that. Yeah. But first, I want to know, tell us, you're not from here.
No, I grew up in a town called Yarmouth, Maine. It's just north of Portland, about 10 miles.
Okay, so is that why you're always posting stuff about the New England Patriots?
I'm a diehard Pats fan. Ever since the Bears wailed on him in 1984, I've been a Pats guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess that's forgivable because you're from there.
Right.
And I only became a fan when they started winning all the championships, and I realized how bad it would make all their... Like, the rest of the firefighters hate the New England Patriots. And as they start, because they win all the games. So I started becoming... Like, I always talk about how Tom Brady's the greatest. But I don't really know, because I watch, like, one football game a year. Yeah. If that. A lot of times I don't even watch the Super Bowl. But... I mean, that's good that you're a fan. Phil Snyder's been a lifetime Patriots fan, too.
Right on.
So you guys have that
It's a good time to be a Pats fan.
So how do you go from Yarmouth? Yep. Is that what it was?
Yarmouth, Maine.
How do you go from Yarmouth to Salt Lake City?
I attended BYU. I moved out here from Maine to go to BYU.
So okay.
That's what got me here. Right about the time I was graduating was when the Olympics were being announced.
Okay. So,
and I was, a typical lost kid coming out of college, not sure what I was going to do. I originally thought I was going to get into law enforcement, and I was working at BYU Police and was coaching at the local youth organization. It was called TAHA at the time, Timpanogos Amateur Hockey Association. And I love coaching. The Peaks was being built, and I said, well, why can't I do hockey for a living?
So were you a hockey player growing up?
I was, absolutely.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So what age did you start playing?
I believe I was 6 or 7 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I had 1 year of mites, what I can remember.
And then you played travel hockey?
I never played travel hockey.
Because you didn't need it as much being in a hockey area.
Yes and no. I mean, growing up in Maine, I basically played September through March, one game and one practice a week. There was very little summer hockey back then. I played what we know is called house league. That was my thing. I did try out for one travel team, and that was a difficult experience. And that experience is really one of the building blocks of how I run my hockey programs now. So,
okay. So what was difficult about the experience?
Well, I was trying out for a travel team, and we had two travel teams. We had an A and a B, just pretty typical. I think I was a Pee Wee, and I believe there were 32 kids trying out, and they were going to take 28, and I was one of the four that didn't make it. And I was convinced, and most of the folks that were around me, that I was going to get a spot on one of the teams, and I didn't.
Okay.
And they ended up just taking all the returning players, the kids that were either coming up or staying.
Right.
And so it was back to the house league for me. So that was tough. That was that was tough. That was the first time I had learned about politics in hockey.
Right.
So, but looking back now, it was difficult, but it was a good lesson to learn. I'm actually grateful that it happened. I often wonder what would have happened if I'd made that travel team and got to play more often. But at the end of the day, it was a good experience, and I look back on it and as a building block of what I do now. So.
Oh, that's cool. I mean, that's how we become who we are. So the
life lessons,
right?
Yeah.
What's did you play hockey at BYU?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
I knew that. But yeah. So tell me about that experience. Tell me about, because I know the other side of it as a, you know, as a Weber guy.
And right. Then,
so tell me about your experience at BYU.
Well, that was 1994, and at the time, it was not a BYU team. We were actually called the Provo Ice Cats.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and there hadn't been a BYU hockey-related program since sometime in the 70s. And so we were just starting up a club team. BYU wouldn't recognize us, so we took on the name Provo Ice Cats, and we played at the old Utah Lake State Park outdoor.
Yeah.
Did you play at Weber at the time?
Yes, I did.
We probably played against each other.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we did. And we had, so, and I've got some very vivid memories of playing there. In fact, a lot of the only games I can remember from my time at Weber have to do directly with some of those games there. Like getting, I remember, you know, arriving and going to get dressed, and now you're in the like the show and tell area of what fish are being fished out of there.
Yep.
And they've just roped off this little, like, greeting area, like the visitor center, right?
Yeah.
Is that what we were getting dressed at?
Yeah, you're addressing the visitor center. We were dressing over in the maintenance shack.
Oh.
And driving over with our gear on and then putting our skates on around the little fire that was, you know, fire pit that was out there before you got on the ice. So
I remember, and do you know John Kuechel? Do you remember John Kuechel at all?
I'm sorry, I can't remember.
No, he's a colorful person. He's he's good with his language. He likes to incite people, and he's always been funny.
Yep.
And I just remember him saying some certain things, and fans jumping on him about, like, I think he swore once, and we had a guy named Todd Nate, and Todd he would swear on the ice, and you were so close to the fans, they were literally leaning over the glass.
They were.
And the funniest one of my the other memories besides getting dressed and learning what a walleye pike was or whatever, like, you know, because literally my stall.
Right.
It's a bench in front of the glass where all the fish are pinned, and this is what you can pull out of Utah Lake.
Yeah.
Casey Norris scored a goal and raised his hand to celebrate and was in the corner with his hands up like this, and fans grabbed his gloves off his hands.
Did they really?
He never got them back.
He never got them back.
And I don't, like, there was, we didn't,
I had
really
to have been
have
in that
security.
Game. I remember that.
You had to have been. But and it was just one of those things where, and I remember having to wear the black stuff under my eyes.
I started that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the first Saturday, we played on Saturday mornings. So, obviously, it was very bright out. So, we used to put hockey tape underneath our eyes and go out. And, it helped.
So, because I was at Weber the first year they had a team. I played, I think, 3 years there. Then graduated from there. And then I played a year at the U.
Okay.
So, it was, kind of fun. So, we played against each other a bunch in those years.
I played just 2 years, the 95, 96. So, then I was graduated, so.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, they used to take the bleachers, and actually they turned them around. So the top end was next to the glass, and the low end was out towards the lake or somewhere else. So, they were literally – the fans were literally with their heads on the top of that glass level.
Yeah. I remember that. I mean, they were right involved in the game and yelling and chirping the whole time.
Oh, I remember a Utah State fan giving me a whole bunch of garbage, and I had a nice little high clearing pass and got their attention.
Nice. I never had that kind of control of the puck. I was always lucky if it went where I – well, still, I can't control the puck, so I couldn't pick off fans if I wanted to. Okay, so you play at BYU, and now they're building Seven Peaks out there. Do you get a job there?
Yeah.
And what do you do there?
I part-time Zamboni driver,
really?
Night supervisor. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get the first full-time hockey director job. They gave it to somebody else. So I was on there part-time, down in the trenches, driving the Zam, supervising the building at night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that also probably, like, not making the team the first time, but kind of getting in there and doing the dirty work, you learn a lot more. It prepares you more for what you do now, right?
Yeah, I hate to say it. I worked the hockey director out of his job.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's
perfect. Well, hey, if he wasn't doing a good job, somebody had to step in and do it, right?
Right.
So.
There you go. So that was your first hockey director job, was in Peaks?
It was at the Peaks.
And how long were you out there?
Oh, a year and a half, 2 years at the most.
And then you've been at Steiner ever since?
I've been at the sports
complex. Salt Lake City Sports Complex?
Yep.
Ever since?
December 2000, actually. Yep, December 2000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Coming up on your 20.
I can't believe it. It's gone by so fast.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's crazy how fast you can just grow old.
Yeah, people look at me like I'm crazy. You've been working the same job for almost 20 years. Well, I've got the best, what I think is the best hockey job in the state.
Yeah.
Where else am I going to go?
Right.
You know.
So tell us all, what does your job include? What do you do?
So the primary responsibilities is Salt Lake County Youth Hockey, the House League, and the Salt Lake Lightning Travel Program, and Learn to Play Hockey. Those are my big three. I also run the County Summer High School League that's currently running.
Oh, yeah.
And I manage that little pro shop down in the bottom. That's kind of the side job.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's kind of a hobby, I call it.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's never open when I'm there.
It's open at night most of the time.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So tell us a little bit. I want to hear stories because I know you have to be involved with some of the discipline and help,
yeah.
and that includes with coaches. But right. first I want to start about, did you start the Lady Lightning or where did that come from?
I did. So the back history on that was I actually was coaching Learn to Skate as part of my job. We needed a hockey instructor, so I'd filled in for the summer. And I had these four little girls in my Learn to Skate class. I can remember three of the names. Three of them, they were Sarah Cahill, Riley Stout, and Alice Peterson.
Oh.
So I had those three girls in my Learn to Skate class, and I was just working with them for 6 weeks. And I just fell in love with those three girls. I mean, they were just the best. And I also had, at the time, my older daughter, Emma, I think she was four or five, and she was starting to get into hockey too. And so I had those girls, and I was over refereeing a hockey game at the Maverick Center, and it was a Lady Grizzly game versus somebody else, and I was really impressed by the players. I mean, these girls could play. And I was between periods, I was talking to Diane Marietti, whose family at the time was running the Lady Grizzlies. So why shouldn't I start a girls program? I've got all these girls in the county. I mean, there were probably 30 girls in the county. Why don't we start a younger girls program? And so that's what kicked it off, was those three little girls and all the other girls in the county.
Okay, so yeah. And with the normal Lightning, the kind of the focus is transitioning players from – tell me if I'm getting this right. So the Lightning's purpose right now is to transition people from recreational or house league
yeah.
into getting them more ready for travel team hockey. You're AA, and then you're getting them ready for AA. Is that – what your kind of mission statement is with regular Lightning?
Yeah, I call it entry-level travel hockey.
Perfect.
It's a bridge between a high-end, high-expensive program and a rec league.
And is that yeah. is that the same goal with the Lady Lightning? Is that your...
Initially, that was it. Yeah, it was okay. to train them up so that they could play at whatever level they wanted to try and get to. Yeah.
And since then, last year...
Yep.
So basically, I guess it's this summer. You guys make a change? What's going on with the program now?
Yeah, so basically the Lady Lightning and the Utah Lady Grizzlies have combined to create one girls hockey organization in the state.
So what age groups do you guys have, and what level are you going to be playing at?
Yeah, so the way things are right now this summer, we're going to be running a 19 AA team, a 19 travel team, a 14 travel team and a 12 travel team.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we're looking at four teams this year.
Wow.
Yeah. It's up one girls team from last year.
And how
which
is
great.
How is it looking so far? Like, have you guys had tryouts or anything yet?
We had tryouts in early June so we could get ahead of the recruiting process.
Right.
So we've got the team set. We just hopefully they all stick.
And
as
you,
the
you
next
had
set
the
of
number,
tryouts
you going. Had the numbers to fill all those teams.
Yeah, mostly.
That's awesome. That's
yeah,
the
double A team is full. The 19 travel could use a few more. The 14 travel is nearly full, and we're always looking good for 12U girls too.
Okay,
good ones, ones that are ready to play at a higher level. So,
and where are the so? How many practices are you going to have a week, and where are these girls going to be playing? And what tournament? Like just tournaments all over the West?
Yeah, for the most part, 2 to 3 practices a week. Chris McPhee is running the AA program, so he's a little more versed on where that they're going to be playing. But the travel teams will be playing Intermountain West, you know, your Jacksons, your Vegas, some Colorado trips, things like that. So,
fun, man! Yeah. So much fun. That's so cool that you guys have that, and I think it's a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the benefits, and obviously with Sarah Cahill's playing at college, and we have all these
yeah.
we have these other females that are coming through and getting opportunities that maybe weren't afforded to them before. And it's awesome that you guys put in that work. And I've always been in awe of it and a supporter of it. I've seen, like, in my age realm, when I first started coaching, one of the first girl goalies I got to coach was Cammie Cote, or Cody, or however they say
Cody,
it. It's different, different depending on which kid you talk to.
Yeah. She went on to play D1 at Vermont.
Right, and not only did she play D1 at Vermont, but she's in their Hall of Fame, and she set all kinds of NCAA records and should have been. I don't know if you're paying attention to speaking of politics back then. She should have been our Olympic goaltender.
Really?
Like, she was the best goalie in women's hockey and setting, like I said, setting NCAA records, and basically was just... The USA hockey program was just going with what they had. And she was clearly a better choice.
Oh, I remember her. She was playing for Hillcrest, and I was coaching Timpanogos High School. And she was the only reason we didn't put 15 goals in on them. I had Jeremy Weiss playing for me at that time.
Oh,
the
yeah.
kid could score from anywhere on the ice. But she gave him quite the the challenge. So
She's a phenomenal goaltender.
Great
and then
bluff.
She even went on to coach at North Dakota. She ended up coaching their program. So she's like our first... that I know of, first female that went through and really started breaking down barriers.
Yeah.
And it was cool as a guy that just kind of helped coach her or just be around, just watching her just catch fire and just tear down those walls.
Right.
And then I think other, like, she would come back and I'd have her work my goalie or my hockey camp every year. And she was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And she was so good with the girls, and she inspired all these other girls that were there. And those girls that were inspired found that had opportunities that you were providing.
Right.
And now we're seeing that pay off in this, like, maybe the second wave. Maybe it's the third wave. I don't know. But it's we've got 5-6 girls right now playing NCAA hockey.
Yep, we do.
And
numerous girls at prep schools as well.
Right.
So anybody know where Cammie Cote is these days? We could use her.
Cammie Cote is a special needs PE teacher.
Is she really?
And she was. She just... yeah, she had twins, I believe, and then she was, yeah, she's phenomenal. So she's still out there working with the kids.
Okay.
My wife's a special needs teacher, and Cammie was the PE teacher at her school.
Oh, cool.
And so I got to go see her every once in a while. I'm just such a huge fan of hers.
Yeah.
And she has an exercise physiology degree or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it is, but man, when she comes in and works with the kids, and, you know, she has... Obviously, she specializes in special needs, which I think kind of translates perfectly into hockey players. And she just has that special patience that you need for those kids that don't have that governor in their head yet. Like, they'll go, you tell them to run 2 laps.
Yep.
And it's not a hard 2 laps, it's a warm up, and they already have kids trying to quit. And Cammie was one that could.
She could keep them going.
She could keep them motivated.
Yeah.
And that was my biggest thing in camp. When I'd get my kids together, my counselors together before camp, I'd say, okay. Camp this week, our focus is keeping the passion for the game alive in these kids, because it gets hammered out of these kids, and you have kids drop out of hockey, and I hate to see that. So Cammie was a huge part of that. She would make them work out, and sometimes the kids didn't even realize how hard they were working because she was so good at her job.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's around. If I were in your guys' shoes and I had girl goalies or girl hockey players,
we do.
I would be reaching out to her.
Blast and, from the past.
Yeah. Bring
that's
her
great.
Bring her out with her resume. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So that's cool about the Lady Lightning.
Yeah.
I'm really excited to see what's going on and it's cool to see cooperation. So who was it that kind of brought this about?
It was me. I hate to take credit for it, but it was me. I've been running Lady Lightning for, I'm starting to forget now, 7 years or so.
Yeah.
With moderate growth. I mean, every year it was, what team are we going to have? Are we going to have it? Are we not? You know. And so it just kind of finally reached a point where I thought we would be better served, girls hockey in the state would be better served if we put one organization together. And that's why I reached out to them this year. So, and I'm glad that I did.
And who did you reach out to?
I reached out to Derek Radke and Steve Brown.
Okay.
And Eric LaPearl. Those are the guys that have been running Lady Grizzlies last few years. And so we just kind of got together and decided to merge the program. You know, one of the things was I wanted to stay heavily involved. So fortunately, I'm on the board of the Utah Lady Grizzlies. So I do still get to steer the ship. That's a good thing. I thought that was very important that I stayed involved. I just didn't want to turn the keys over and hopefully the car didn't get run into a telephone pole.
It's hard to just give up your baby.
It is. You know, some folks gave me some garbage about not pushing harder for a complete name change. But at the end of the day, we felt like the existing Lady Grizzlies name had enough staying power that we should just keep it.
Okay.
So
yeah. So that's what it is, Lady Grizzlies?
It's the Utah Lady Grizzlies. And we're not associated with the Utah Junior Grizzlies.
Okay.
A lot of folks get that a little bit mixed up and confused. So.
Yeah, I think I actually got that confused.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
So. Well, now you've cleared it up.
Cleared it up.
All right. And that's very cool, and I'm excited to see it, because and I've brought this up before. I know that in the past, like with the Lady Grizzlies, you'd see that they'd have, like, I remember one of my goalies,
Sierra Hodge.
Yeah, Sierra Hodge was playing, and I think she was like 13, 14, and then the rest of the team was like 19. And there was there was this huge disparity. Like, that's huge. You're putting a 13-year-old girl in goal. Yeah. And so it's good to see that you guys have, it's coming. It's going in the right direction, and we're gonna see hopefully more success in these girls playing and being awesome.
Yep.
So, but that's not all you do. You also do. You're talking about the high school hockey.
Yeah.
And that's got to be. I just saw a video. So obviously, people send all kinds of stuff to me lately.
Yeah.
And high school hockey is such a testosterone filled.
Yep.
Gong show a lot of the times.
There's a big skill difference between a lot of the players.
Right.
Huge.
And it's fun to watch, but you'll see a kid that's maybe never played hockey or maybe has a year of hockey under their belt, and maybe they've seen something on TV or they've come up with some move in their mind, some cheap shot, or maybe they just become overwhelmed,
right?
Overcome with emotion. And since I've been hosting the show, I've gotten 10, 12 videos of things. I don't post them.
Right.
I don't want to bring that out, but it's amazing to me to see some of the cheap shots.
Yeah. And there's one I'm currently dealing with.
I wonder if that's the same one I'm talking about.
Probably.
And unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm going to describe it a little bit. You tell me if it's the same one. I'm not going to use any names of any teams or anything like that.
Yeah, I need to be careful because I'm still dealing with the discipline on it. We can talk about it.
Okay. Like I said, I don't want to compromise anything.
Right.
But I want to talk about... So you've got kids that are just getting into hockey, and what the video I saw, you have a kid that, you know, they're mucking it up in front of the net.
Yeah. Okay.
And one kid goes, if I remember right, he goes to the corner, and the play kind of goes away, and the kid's still, he's at midboard, and he's facing up ice, and the kid that he was kind of mucking it up with in the crease comes from the crease,
right,
and gives a cross check right to the brainstem.
Yeah.
On the kid. And from what I understand, there was actually some pretty significant damage done to the kid.
Yeah. It turned out later that we found out that he received 22 stitches across the eyebrow and some shoulder damage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That came out a little later.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's significant. Yeah. And
it is.
When you see that play, it's significant. So how – and look, let's go away from this exact play.
Yeah.
But – what I want to know is how do we help one, that's a horrible play. But two, this is our opportunity to work with this kid that's the offender.
Mm-hmm.
And I know in my age group, in my day, we had a few players that received, they did something crazy and stupid like that.
Right.
And, I mean, there's just no place in the game for that.
Correct.
And they got lifetime bans. But there's other discipline. There's another way to, do we chase that kid out of hockey? Or do we realize that this is, or I don't know what's right or wrong. What do you do? How do you approach that?
Yeah, well, in this particular instance, there is absolutely no room in our game for that kind of stuff.
Right.
Especially now in the day of lawyers and insurance and all that kind of stuff. That's scary stuff. And USA Hockey is trying to get that out of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, they really are. And I think they're making strides, but it comes down to enforcement. Whether, you know, you can debate that incident, whether the proper penalty was called or not. And that's for, I guess, another discussion. But
even know what penalty was called. That part wasn't sent to me. What was called?
Yeah, so in that, it was just a game misconduct. It was either cross-checking or head contact. I'd have to look at the score sheet again. So in that incident, the kid only received a one-game suspension.
Wow.
So, and that's where the controversy is starting to brew up over it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because clearly what I saw was... But again, maybe the refs didn't see it. The refs here are overwhelmed.
Yeah, and if you look at if anyone does watch that video, note where the puck is when the actual incident occurs. It's not where the incident is.
Right.
So there's a good chance that the officials saw that not on full vision, maybe at the corner of their eye.
Yeah.
So it's really easy to ref blame, and officiate from the bleachers and the bench, because obviously when you're in the bleachers, you see everything. But you don't know what the official does and doesn't see.
It's a high school game, so you have one ref.
Yeah. Two refs.
So it's a two-man system.
It's a two-man in summer high school.
It's there's only two officials on the ice.
Right.
So that's even worse than what I was thinking it was. And by worse, I just mean there are less eyes watching. We know that the two-man system can work.
Yep.
Especially, like in my men's league, two are fine.
Right.
Like, we don't care. We just... like offsides, and maybe every once in a while somebody gets a stick in the face or whatever. But our guys, it seems like at the Division I level, there's a lot less to be called. But at the high school level, maybe the two-man system is just overwhelming.
But I will say at your level, those officials need to be on their ball.
Well, yeah.
Because, you know, high-level players know how to get away with stuff.
That's true,
and they can keep it pretty subtle.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, too. But, again, most of us know each other pretty well, too.
Right.
And if you get away with something now, you'll get it later, and then most guys... you're on the same, you're a different team on Sunday, but you're on the same team on Wednesday, and the guys are, it seems like it's pretty, it works itself out, right?
Right.
But, so getting back to it, we have a ref that's maybe didn't see it, and you don't even have a third linesman on the ice to catch it either. So,
correct.
So I didn't know it only got called game misconduct.
Right. And the two officials did debate the call for several minutes after the player left the ice.
Okay.
So I'm not saying they're right or wrong on that, but they did give it some thought. They just didn't report a penalty and let's drop the puck and let's keep going. They did think about it for a while.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Well, it's I mean, man, there's nothing you can do if you didn't see it.
Yeah.
Or if you saw it out of the corner of your eye or just the last part of it. But, that was a clear cross-check to like an intent to injure cross-check. So it's up for review.
Yep.
And, again, we'll go away from this specific case, but you say USA Hockey wants that out of the game.
They want it out of the game. Everybody wants it out of the game.
So what do we do? How do we send the message for that? How do we get that out of the game?
Enforcement.
All right. So,
you know, USA Hockey spends a lot of time trying to train their officials.
Yeah.
And I guess if I have one criticism officiating countrywide, nationwide, is maybe the training isn't as thorough as it could be.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure USA Hockey is working on that. But it's hard to train all these independent hockey associations, referee associations, on total rule enforcement.
Right.
You know, so enforcement is the key. And as a league administrator, I can only do so much with that. You know, it's really not my responsibility to try and change the player. I just have to enforce the rules the best I can. So, you know, at the end of the day, the player makes the conscious decision to go after somebody else.
Right.
It's his decision.
I totally get that. And in the past, I would I don't know. I just wonder, is that kid going to get – it was called a game misconduct. Now it's up for review. That kid's going to get supplemental discipline, right?
Yes. He has already been issued some supplemental discipline, but it may go a little further.
Okay.
So that's – I don't want to go too – that's where I am this morning with it, actually.
All right. So let's get – I want to get off this specific case. What does it take to get a kid suspended for a season? What does it take to get a kid kicked out of hockey? Completely. Have you seen a guy get a lifetime USA ban or a year-long USA ban lately?
I've seen an adult, and I'm trying to think off the top of my head on a player. I know there's been a couple. They've been out of my direct realm, so I'm not as familiar as I could be, I guess, if it was a high school kid. But I think there was a high school kid that got a significant suspension recently.
Okay.
But I can't remember, Jay. But I remember an adult player he was banned from the county program forever.
Really?
Yeah.
So what?
It was bad. It was a baseball swing to somebody's head.
Judas Priest.
Knocked him out.
Yeah.
So it was assault.
Know. Yeah.
And he was prosecuted.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay.
This was, 2001, 2002, long time ago.
Was that on Trevor's dad?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was.
Yeah, all right. That was
Trevor's dad. That was on Randy.
That was on Randy. Randy wasn't the offender.
Correct.
And I know exactly who you're talking about.
Yep.
Okay, and he was actually one of the best players in my age group.
He was a fantastic player.
Yep, yep.
Oh, yeah.
I saw him at the bowling alley not too long ago. That's his thing now. So, yeah, that's horrible. Okay, that was like one of the only lifetime bans I knew about. I know of a guy that I play with currently that got a year and a half for choking out a ref.
Yeah, I remember that one. Yep.
And honestly, and I'm going to say I'm good friends with this guy, and his brother is one of my lifetime best friends.
Yep.
And I still think he should have got a lifetime ban for it.
You think so, huh?
I think he got off easy.
Yeah.
I don't think you ever go hands-on with a ref. I don't care. I don't care. And I've lost my temper 1,000 times. And, well, maybe not 1,000 times. I'm actually pretty even kill, I think. But I just think that there's a line that once you cross it, you probably shouldn't come back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's another adult guy that was banned for a year from the county program for something very similar last year.
Okay.
Yeah, he shoved an official.
It's crazy, man. It's just crazy. I don't know why I'm going down this path.
I guess it's more positive here.
I guess just because you're always there and you get to see so much stuff.
A lot of it.
And you get to hear the behind-the-scenes stuff. And because you've been an official, you've ran leagues, you've done all this stuff. I never had the guts to become an official. And we're so short on officials right now. We need people that, number one, can skate. Number two, know the game. So we need more players to transition into being refs. Yeah. And do you think, you wanted to be a cop before, do you think that kind of helped you want to get into reffing?
At the time, I was playing for a men's league team down in Provo. I think it was the BYU team in the summer. We were playing in Brickley's League.
Right.
And Rob Fellows was one of the officials, and I just thought he was the coolest guy.
He is a coolest guy.
He's a cool dude.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be like Rob. I thought, all right, I can do this. Rob can do it. I can do it. And so that's what got me into officiating. It wasn't because I wanted to get in law enforcement. I just thought Rob Fellows was a cool dude. And
how come we can't all be like Rob Fellows? How many refs want to be like Rob? His name's come up on the program a few times.
Yeah.
But nobody hates Rob Fellows.
No.
You can officiate that long and still, he was just so mellow on the ice, and he always had good control of the game.
He did.
And he just was so nonchalant about stuff. Everybody loved Rob Fellows.
Yeah.
And he could kick you, he could give you a 5-minute major, kick you out of the game, and you'd be like, hey, thanks, Rob. Okay, I'll see you after I serve my suspension.
You'd still feel good about it.
Yeah.
Right.
What a great guy to be behind.
Yeah. I will tell you, these guys are overworked right now.
Absolutely.
We're losing officials.
Yeah.
And my high school league this year is 223-something games.
Wow.
And then plus Matt's league.
Yeah.
That's running, plus the county adult league.
Yeah.
There's 4 or 5 games a night.
Yeah.
At least, plus the oval. And these guys are working 6-7 games a week.
So
it's tough. They get burned out. They get tired. They get sick and tired of people.
Absolutely.
You know?
How could you not?
How could you not?
Well, ballpark me what a ref makes per game.
I'm pulling this out of my backside. Okay. So an adult two-man is $40.
Okay.
$45. High school's pretty similar.
All right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can make a couple $100 a night if you go.
You can make some decent money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we need. We need more people that are, if you're thinking about becoming an official, right now is the time. I mean, the call is out there.
The call is out there. At all ages.
Yeah.
Not high school and adult. It's mites and squirts and peewees. We need kids.
If you want to learn patience and check your abilities, become an official.
Yeah. Well, it really bothers me when these rec coaches are doing a county game or a Lightning game, and they got kid referees out there, and they're giving them all kinds of garbage. That's just not acceptable in my
I agree.
In my view.
Yeah,
I
saw that a little bit with my son. My son only played 1 year of rec, and I think he was 6. And I remember his one of his coaches lighting up an official for a missed offside or something.
In a white game.
Who cares?
Right.
The kids are – I don't even care who wins or loses. Do you remember now who won or lost? It doesn't matter. What matters is the kids are having fun.
Yeah.
And parents, coaches, refs, everybody's got to keep that in mind. We got to make sure we're out there and that the game is fun and that the kids are having fun and that the kids want to go back to the rink the next day.
Right.
And it's hard to remember at all times because you get caught up in the little things.
Yeah. I will say these incidents happen, but they're in the minority.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, the game is in good shape. And it's a very positive experience for everyone involved.
And
every once in a while, this stuff crops up, and it causes problems, and people talk about it a lot. And sometimes it leaves a negative stereotype on the game. But for the most part, it's a great sport. It's a great game.
And that's the reason I don't share
it
on our website, is I don't want people to think that that's what's going on with hockey right now.
Yep.
I don't care what sport you talk about. My son plays soccer, and I've seen more cheap shots in soccer. The tackles from behind, maybe not more, but equal.
Right.
Right? There's equal. Basketball. My girl played basketball, and I saw lots of cheap shots there, too, amongst girls. So it happens in sports. It happens when you have anybody competing against anybody. It happens in the fire department when we get together to play basketball or soccer. It happens at church ball.
Right.
Right? Church ball's going to the Supreme Court
Right. There's a case pending right now, Utah State Supreme Court, about some injury that happened in a church ball game.
It happens. But I can tell you, without being able to play hockey 3 or 4 times a week, I would not be sane. And I have to go out and I have to be able to play the game. And that is my vent. That is my yoga. That is my zen. And I think it's that way for I don't know, 12,000 people that live in Utah.
Right.
And I think, and so it's, but it's pretty safe. Every once in a while, something's going to happen to ruin your Zen garden.
Yep.
Somebody's going to not realize their place or the limit of the day,
yep.
or accidentally stick you in the face or purposely stick you in the face. But right. don't let it ruin your, I mean, just come back the next day
yep.
with your new stitches.
All right.
That's what happens.
New stitches.
All right. So you say the game is growing. You say the game's in good shape. How have you seen it grow? Like, tell me about... How many high school hockey teams do you see now, and do you see more coming? Do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think we all know that high school hockey is not as big as it used to be.
Right.
Back in the mid-90s, early to mid-2000s, it was 40-something teams.
Okay.
So the problem, the big challenge high school has right now are charter schools. And they're trying to figure out how to split all these charter school kids up and get them on teams, and it's making the existing high school teams smaller and smaller and more difficult to form new ones. I'm currently working with Highland. My daughter goes to Highland, and we're trying to get a team together, but the numbers are just barely hanging on. And so that's the big challenge there, is trying to get the kids put in the right spot. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy because you see that, I mean, when you try to get ice time, there's no ice time.
There's no ice.
Like, everything's booked up, and it seems like it's mostly hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there are some other things that go on the ice that, and you know, it just seems to me like we're at a spot, and we keep hearing maybe there's going to be another sheet added at Murray or
right.
or whatever, and I hope there is, and I'm for sheets at every high school. That would be unreal.
Right.
I mean, I want as many as possible. That's, I think the more ice we have, the more hockey players we have.
Yeah, I had a sheet in my hometown. It was great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
God, I bet, man. I got to tell you, it's just... When I started playing in Utah, there were two spots. We had Bountiful and Cottonwood, and Hygieia had burned down.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hygieia had burned down. So it's, you know, I had Friday night practice.
Yeah.
9 o'clock. I had one practice a week, one game a week.
Yep.
And then when I moved away for a few months, and I went to a school that had a rink on campus. And, man, it was amazing.
Yeah.
Because I had seen it in Youngblood that you could go on the ice and take shots by yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the only time I'd ever seen it. You could go out and you could work on the game by yourself and take shots. And you never had that opportunity here
right.
in Utah. But now you can kind of, if you go out to the stick and pucks.
Yep. We're getting more of that. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, Shannon, I just think it's amazing how much you have done for hockey since you've been involved in hockey. And you've been involved in hockey in Utah about the same amount of time I've been here.
Yeah.
And you've done so much, and it just makes me feel like I should have done more.
Oh,
like, I just think it's awesome, and I can't thank you enough for everything you've done. And as a father of a female athlete, I always got to reach out and thank the guys that have put in the time and created opportunities for the girls, because, I mean, my daughter's reaping the full reward of being a female athlete right now.
Right.
And I just think it's awesome. And these girls that are doing it, I hope they appreciate it. And I hope the parents appreciate what you've done.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a few questions.
Yeah.
And if you don't have anything off the top of your head, that's fine. This isn't an entry-level test to get your county job.
Right.
Do you have the craziest story that you can think of? I get this all the time as a firefighter. And
okay.
It was easy to answer 5 years into the job. But
yep.
now that I've been in the job for 22 years, I can't answer this question. But... Can you tell me, like, what is one of the craziest memories you have as a ref?
I remember I was doing a game at the Maverick Center. It was a Wamaha Cobras game back when they were called the Cobras.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that. And I think it was a Stars game. It was a Pee-wee game. And first period was fine. The second period got absolutely out of hand. It was crazy. And play went down the ice. Two kids were behind me. I hear some commotion. I turn around, and when a player's laying on the ice, and another player's on top of him with two hands on a stick, just giving him the tomahawk chop
Whoa.
Across the back. He got three in before I grabbed this kid, and luckily it was by the penalty box. I grabbed this kid. I shoved him, opened the door, and I just shoved him in the penalty box. At the time, that's all I felt like I could do to stop what was going on.
Right.
Right? And assessed a match penalty, which is at the time, or was probably a gross misconduct at the time. I don't remember what it's called, which is the most severe that an official can assess on the ice.
Yeah.
So I gave him a match, and I found out 3 days later he was playing again.
Wow.
I had a kangaroo court
yep.
on that one, and because it was playoff time.
Oh, yeah.
The kid was playing again. So
oh.
anyway, I did my part.
Yeah.
So.
That is pretty
That's
crazy.
That's probably my craziest officiating story.
All right. And my next question would be, if you could go back and tell 20-year-old Shannon Smith some advice, what would it be? What would you tell yourself?
What would I tell myself?
Yeah.
I'd go back even further with the same advice.
Okay.
Stay out of the penalty box.
Stay out of the penalty box.
Stay out of the penalty box.
That's pretty good advice for everybody.
It is great advice. So.
Okay.
It you know, hockey's an emotional support. It's an emotional sport.
I think it's both. It's emotional support
exactly.
and it's an emotional sport.
Right?
Yep. Yep.
And, yeah, you know, I spent my fair amount of time in the penalty box. And if I could do that over again, yeah.
Okay.
Keep it a little more cool. Keep the team in your focus a little more, you know.
That's perfect.
Hey, I played physical, so as a defenseman. So if you're a D and you play physical, you are going to sit every once in a while. There's no doubt about that.
Right.
So
you're going to push the boundaries, and every once in a while, right or wrong, you're going
to
sit in the box.
Yeah, especially no check when you can't run into somebody.
Yeah.
Right? When you do, so.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a learning curve.
Yeah.
Okay. you are, and I'm going to hit you up on this right now. You were telling me something before we went on the air that's got me pretty excited, and I'm gonna work this out to get your buddy on.
Yeah.
And you guys are making progress in ways of tracking coaches. You've seen some crazy coaches come through the system that maybe shouldn't be coaching.
Oh, absolutely.
And we talked. I mean,
yeah.
This is a volunteer job.
Yeah.
You're gonna coach kids, and it has been. Now we're looking back hundreds of years at hockey and we're saying, man, that guy, now that we know about that guy, he should have never been in charge of children.
Yep.
And we have background checks, but some organizations will even allow, I don't know how it's happened, but some organizations will be like, yeah, that guy got flagged on a background check, but somehow he still coached for
right.
years.
Yeah.
And as a volunteer, you open yourself up for a ton of liability.
Mm-hmm.
And as a volunteer coach, you accept all that. As a parent, you open your kid up to a lot of vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me just a little tidbit of this new program that's coming out and tell me about who started it.
Yeah, so, you know, background checks only get you so far. And for me as an administrator, the background check is important, but that's not going to discover what I feel are the real problems, the character of that human being that you're asking to coach for your program. You know, maybe he had a criminal background. Most of the time they don't.
Right.
It's more the other stuff that I'm worried about, the abuse, how they treat the players, how they treat officials, their attitude towards winning and losing. So when I tell people my most difficult decisions every year is who I select as my Lightning coaches. I have to spend as much time on that as I can. And at the end of the day, I hope I get it right. And most of the times, I have. Every once in a while, you do get a bad apple, and you have to let them go. If you know, at some point. So anyway, the new program is called it's a web platform called GreatCoach.com. It's being started by a local hockey coach and good friend of mine named Bill Kerrig. It's difficult to describe what the platform is, but it's essentially a way to deal with a trend in youth sports that's tending to take over, which is lawyers and insurance.
Yeah.
You know, this whole safe sport, abuse, liability stuff is really creeping into these national governing bodies and is dictating a lot of decisions that are being made. And I think it's a good thing. It's making it more difficult for hockey organizations and volunteers to want to be part of it. But I think at the end of the day, it's a good thing. We need to get rid of those coaches that are abusive to kids.
Absolutely.
We got to get rid of them. So
Absolutely.
Anyway, Bill's website is a platform to help mediate that and filter that. And he's got a lot of great things coming down the pike, and I think it could be a game changer for youth sports.
All right. We're going to get him on the show then.
We need him on the show.
The next few weeks, and for the podcast listeners, the next few weeks are pretty intense for the show. But I want to get Bill in.
Yeah.
But I mean, we've got our next few guests. We've got Aaron Dell from the San Jose Sharks, former Utah Grizzly. We've got Brad May. Brad's going to do a Skype interview with us, and he's going to talk to us about. He spent some time in Utah. He owns property in Utah.
Yeah.
And that's going to be pretty awesome. And we're just going to keep covering more stuff about Utah hockey, and we're going to talk more about we're going to follow, and we're going to go out and do some of the stuff from the Lady Grizzlies.
Oh, great!
And we're going to also have a few more female guests that I'm sure are former players of yours, including. Sweet. I got to reach out to Sarah. I haven't had Sarah on here, which is weird. I've known her the longest out of all the, because I coached her brother.
Yeah, Sarah's in town right now. She helped me with a Lady Ducks camp a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
I think
that
she goes back fairly soon. So
yeah, I got to reach out to her. I got to get more. So the show's picking up, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We've been it's summer and we've been a little bit slow. We've been doing one podcast a week, but we're gonna up that and get some more of these awesome guests. I can't wait to talk to Bill and find this out because there's always been that thing about you can't say, like, all right, this guy, like, if you could pull up a coach and say, all right, he coached in this organization, then he was in this organization, and those organizations give him an A.
Yeah, right.
Or these organizations give him a C. Well, why? Was he not good with tactics, or was he not good with kids, or was he not good with parents, or was he not good with the refs? Or, but what part of that are you putting yourself out there for? Maybe, you know, slander or libel or something.
Exactly.
So there's got to be a balance. So I want to talk to Bill about that.
That's what he's trying to filter out.
We got to find a way to protect the kids.
Yep.
But again, thank you for everything you've done for hockey, and thank you for still being so forward-thinking with everything you do and trying to just keep hockey awesome here.
Yeah.
I know you have more cool stories, and, you know, as we keep going, we'll think of more stories, and we'll bring you back in.
Maybe another time. So, hey, and thanks for having me on the show. I will say that I'm very blessed to be able to make a living off a sport that I love. I generally look forward to going to work every day, and I keep that in the back of my mind that I'm very privileged to be in the position that I am. And so hopefully that permeates to the public and they can see that I love what I do and I care about the kids and I care about what's going on, and I really do want to make it better for everybody.
It's very refreshing to hear. Very refreshing to hear. You're not just doing a job. You're doing something you love.
Right? It doesn't feel like a job sometimes.
And that's so awesome. That's important.
My wife will tell you something different.
Yeah.
when I bring it home.
A lot of sacrifice on your part, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So that's it for today. If you have not yet subscribed to the podcast, if this maybe is your first time listening, just hit the subscribe button. You can go to all the places you get podcasts. That's iTunes or Google Play. You can also, of course, find us on kslsports.com under podcasts, and or you could just text the word puck to 57500. And for Shannon, thanks again for being in.
Yeah, thanks. It was great.
I'm Jay Stevens, and that was the Utah Puck Report.
Okay.